Bla-da-da-da-da-da.
Hi. Welcome to another episode of Hello, My Name is True Crime.
My name's Kayla.
My name's Travers.
And he's extremely loud. I'm so sorry for your speakers and your ears. Oh, so we hope you guys are ready for the holidays.
Yes.
It's going to be fun.
Well, it's supposed to be fun, but it probably never really is in reality because everyone's always stressed out and broke and fighting with the other person in line who's trying to take the thing that you were there for and blah, 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 blah. I like how they put that right on Thanksgiving now. It's kind of like, hey, you know, Thanksgiving, we're going to just ruin it. It was like, you know, give thanks for you mother, you know, and then they're trying to kill somebody because they're taking the thing that you wanted.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I didn't even go Black Friday, Thanksgiving Day shopping this year. So that was... I just skipped out this year. I didn't even go at all.
Oh, yeah. You didn't go.
No.
Yeah.
Nope.
She flaked.
I did. I did not go this year.
Which is bizarre because she's gone religiously for a decade.
My little granny, like, she loves to go Black Friday shopping, and I go with her every year. And this year, I wasn't in the mood. So... now I've been stressing and cramming to get all of the Christmas shopping done. And,
we're not done yet.
No, that's why I've started drinking wine.
That way she can bury her problems in a bottle.
Absolutely. No, yesterday was fun. We wrapped Christmas presents and watched a, like, true crime movie and drank some wine.
Yes, we
did. Trav was becoming a wino yesterday, too.
Well, it hit the spot.
Yeah.
I had two glasses.
We've been drinking the Pink Moscato. It's pretty good.
By some super fancy rich brand.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a really pricey. I think it's like a 67.
It was a $4.
Yeah, it was a $4 bottle of wine.
Cheap and trashy, just like me.
That's how we like it.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, you guys. So we...
Kayla, you're not cheap.
I'm not, but you know. Do you guys remember when we were like jumping up? Well, I was jumping up and down in the living room because we hit 300 plays. Well, I do. We are like almost to 5,000. I know. We are almost to 5,000 plays and downloads.
That's way more than 300.
Mm-hmm.
That's like... dance party central.
Yes.
Like, we're gonna have a party. We're gonna invite friends over. We're gonna dance. We're gonna party. And then we're gonna kick them out abruptly because
we better buy more wine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you guys so much. It's mind-blowing that we've hit that so fast. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So we appreciate it. You guys are amazing.
Definitely.
We love you so
much. We do.
Yeah. All right, so. Today's episode is part two of the Hannah Overton case.
The long awaited for.
Finally.
Finally.
So just to recap, in 2006.
No, you got to do it in the recap voice.
What is that? Do you want to?
Previously on Law and Order.
Yeah.
Except not Law and Order because.
Dun dun. Hello, my name is True Crime.
Previously on Hello, my name is True Crime.
Previously on Hello, my name is True Crime.
Perfect. Keep going. Don't stop.
In 2006, 4-year-old Andrew Bird died from salt poisoning. Hannah Overton and Larry Overton, who were in the process of adopting him, were charged with his death. Larry was only given 5 years of deferred adjudication probation. That is so hard to say.
That's a lot of big words, too. I feel like layman's terms might need to be just kind of like sifted into that.
Yeah.
So that way, you know, people are like, wow, that sounds terrible.
Pretty much like,
what does that mean?
Like a... light probation.
Yeah, Jesus.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
And Hannah was found guilty and given life in prison in the state of Texas.
Actually reminds me of the movie that we watched last night that you mentioned.
Yeah.
It was called Fracture. It has Anthony Hopkins in it and Ryan Gosling.
Yeah,
oh, he's such a heartthrob. Yeah.
And the girl, the woman that played in Gone Girl.
Oh my God, I love her.
I can't remember what her name was.
Like, if we ever get a divorce, I'm going to stalk her.
Okay. You know,
Rosamund Pike.
Yes. Yes, I actually don't really like her, only because
she's a fantastic
of
actress.
Her character. Yeah, her character in Gone Girl. So
yeah.
I just have this obviously negative association because of how much of a she was.
There's
in
tons
the
of
movie.
Actors. There's other actors out there that I don't like because of the the characters they played. Yeah. They did such a good job of being a douchebag.
Like a villain or whatever, right. Yeah.
That guy sucks. But really,
they're just good actors.
They're amazing actors. Right. You know?
Totally agree.
What I was going to say was, Anthony Hopkins allegedly murders his wife and or attempts to, and he decides to represent himself in court. And he's a very intelligent man. Yeah. He's a very intelligent man, but he decided to represent himself because he didn't think that the attorney was
adequate.
Yeah, adequate. And he had a plan, you know. So anyway, he was representing himself, and he was talking to the judge, you know, like, I apologize, I don't really know the legal terminology and stuff like that. And it's really freaking disgusting. Like, who came up with all the legal jargon? Like, it's just, it's like, what is that? What was the thing that you read there a minute ago?
The deferred adjudication probation?
Yeah.
It's really hard to say.
It's hard to say. It's a bunch of big, dumb words that basically mean
light probation.
Light probation.
Pretty much. Yeah.
So, like, why can't they just say light probation? Why do they have to be like, adjudication, simulation, fumalumadumadum, ding.
And it has to be confusing so that civilians just don't understand it.
Yes. Because if civilians did understand it, then they could represent themselves. Right. And they wouldn't have to pay some guy tons of money to represent them.
Yeah. Like, no, it is confusing. A lot of the terminology is really confusing.
God bless capitalism.
During my first criminal justice class, some of the terms were so difficult to remember. I had to make flashcards because some of them are very similar, but like slightly different. And it's so easy to
mix and match.
Yeah, mix them because like it's just like a slight difference in them.
And that could be the difference in a new attorney asking for freedom for their client or the death penalty.
Right.
They're like,
seriously, it could. Yeah.
Yeah, I messed that up. My bad. I did not mean.
Well,
he's dead now.
If
so,
they pass the bar, hopefully they know all the terms.
Well, sure. I mean, double jeopardy and all that stuff's in first degree law. So, you know.
Absolutely.
I learned that from a movie.
Real quick, before we proceed, if you haven't listened to part one, you might want to back it up a little bit and go listen to that before you listen to this episode. Back that thing up.
Oh my God, Becky, look at her butt. Yeah, definitely, because this, again, if you weren't paying attention, is part two. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you've missed a whole part one.
Part dos.
Part numero dos.
All right, so moving on.
Okay.
After Hannah was convicted, her defense attorneys were they just couldn't let her case go, and that's because they felt that she had been wrongfully convicted.
Absolutely, and why wouldn't they?
Right. So they ended up reaching out to one of the top criminal defense attorneys in the state of Texas, and her name was Cynthia Orr, and she looked into Hannah's case and found that there were pretty much just a shit ton of holes in the case.
Mother friggin' Swiss cheese, bah.
And she was like, well, you know what? This will be the key to getting the appeal. Cynthia ended up putting together what people called the dream team. That would include herself and attorneys Jerry Goldstein and John Riley. His name looks like Riley, but with an A, so I keep wanting to say John Riley. John C. Riley.
Is it Raleigh or Rayleigh?
It's Rayleigh.
Whatever.
John Rayleigh. Yeah.
Well, you guys will probably hear a mixture of different ways to say it throughout this segment.
Yes. So Cynthia ended up contacting the assistant prosecutor, Anna Jimenez. Oh, I got her name this time.
You did it. I was like, wow.
Yes. And she asked to review the Overton file. And quickly, she became convinced that the only reason that Hannah was found guilty was only because so much information was withheld by the prosecution.
Yeah, withheld. As in, like, not shared with everybody.
Which
so
cannot happen.
Right. They pretty much just took what they wanted, used that, and all the stuff that could have set her free or made more sense or been more fair was just
hidden,
neatly tucked away underneath newspaper.
Absolutely. So then in 2011... Cynthia Orr filed a direct appeal to Judge Longoria. And if you remember, Judge Longoria was the judge at Hannah Overton's case, the one that proceeded with her conviction. And she asked him to consider all the things that were wrong in the trial and to overturn Hannah's conviction. Cynthia had found that there were experts both for the prosecution and the defense that never got to speak in front of the jury. One of them was Dr. Edgar Cortez, Andrew's pediatrician.
Edgar Cortez. Yeah.
So he was Andrew's pediatrician, and he was also a witness for the prosecution. And then there was the lead expert in the country on salt, who is Dr. Michael
Moritz. Similar so to Cortez. There's just so many.
Isn't there a salt like Mortez salt or something like that?
Moritz.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I thought there was. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. Anyways, so he was
like the little kid with the umbrella and the raincoat.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is. Mm-hmm.
I'll be right back.
Okay. So Dr. Michael Moritz was a witness for the defense.
Morton.
The salt is Morton. I knew it was something similar.
And I knew it was a little kid in the rain with an umbrella. It just so happens to be a little girl with a really short skirt. Jeez. It's like got a little bit of Marilyn Monroe action going.
So it was found that both men had waited a week to testify at Hannah's trial, but neither of them were called to the stand. During the appeal hearing, Dr. Cortez said that the prosecution had never allowed him to testify, but instead they portrayed Andrew as a completely normal child, pretty much until living with the Overtons. They hid so much during this trial. It's ridiculous.
It was a mega dick move.
He said that although he had told the prosecution that Andrew had hyperactivity, short attention span, behavior problems, developmental delays, that they never once mentioned any of this during Hannah's trial. And he felt that the jury was not given the correct information regarding Andrew.
They weren't?
Absolutely not. He said that it would have been more important for them to know, especially because children that have any of these issues, the hyperactivity, especially the impulse behavior, they have a higher incident of not only getting into trouble by accident, but even poisoning. So that is something that is extremely important for them to recognize, was that he had all of these things going on with him, especially the impulse behavior.
Jesus.
So remember Anna Jimenez that we just talked about? She had even testified at the appeal trial that Sandra Eastwood did not want Dr. Cortez called to the stand. She said that it was because she knew that if he testified, he would testify that Andrew had behavior problems, and she just did not want that put out for the jury to know.
Yeah, because, you know, that's a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
So find out that he has issues and behavioral problems and stuff like that would indicate that, you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's so much that she kept out, and it really, she pretty much, in my opinion, she pretty much swayed the jury by leaving out major details in what happened in this case.
For totes.
So when it came to Dr. Michael Moritz during Hannah's original trial, the judge had ordered a deposition, and it was pretty much they took him into a room and recorded him while Sandra Eastwood and then somebody from the defense just asked him questions. But Sandra Eastwood apparently kept interrupting him and objecting to literally everything he had to say. He had even explained that if a child had ingested a large amount of sodium, it would have taken hours and hours before any signs and symptoms would be severe enough that someone would realize that the child needed medical attention. And that's something that you brought up last time. Like, you were talking, like, how, I mean, not everybody is like, oh my gosh, we're going to rush our child to the doctor.
Kids throw up, kids run fevers, kids feel crappy, kids feel cold, kids get sick.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you do everything in your power as a parent or a legal guardian or a caretaker to provide what's needed to be provided to the best of your ability.
Mm-hmm.
We're not doctors. We're parents.
Right. And we're told by doctors when you should and shouldn't bring your child into the doctor.
Exactly. So, and so if it's just little stuff like that, like this, the shit thing about salt poisoning that we've learned in the first case is that it's hard to detect, mm-hmm. and once it is detected,
it's too late.
It's too late to do anything about it. You can't do anything about it.
Right.
So it's a terrible fucking thing.
Exactly. And he had also stated during his deposition that the vomiting, a lethargic child, confusion, all of that could definitely be overlooked by a parent that, again, knows absolutely nothing about salt poisoning.
Right. And even if they did know about salt poisoning, it could still not necessarily point to salt poisoning.
Right.
He could just have an allergic reaction to something that he ate or food poisoning because that sounds like food poisoning.
Well, he also said that, in his opinion, all of those like signs and symptoms are so subtle that it could be seen as a child coming down with the flu, like happened in this case.
Yeah, and you're not going to rush your kid to the hospital because of the flu,
right?
Unless it's severe, you know, symptoms.
And he testified that definitely the caregivers wouldn't know something was wrong until, like you said, it's too late,
right?
And again, that's exactly what happened in this case. It's very sad and very tragic, but that's what happened. He told the court that it was very clear that Andrew had not been intentionally poisoned, but it was definitely accidental salt poisoning. He also backed up the fact that salt poisoning, in fact, caused the blood to not be able to clot, which caused all of the intense bruising on his skin. And that is something that someone that knows little to nothing about this kind of stuff would be confused. Like, they would
be like, well,
abuse.
He's obviously physically abused as well.
Right.
Well, the case is with that, like we sort of touched on it in the first one, or maybe we totally covered it.
Yeah.
You know, it's similar to, what is it? It's like petechia and stuff like that. You know, like just your body can't do what it's supposed to do in a situation for healing. It's weakened and, you know.
Yeah, it just doesn't clot like it's supposed to.
Right.
And when the when they were doing the deposition, he was like, you know, even with today's technology, under the best medical care in the hospital, when someone has salt poisoning, they die. Like, he was telling them that this is something that happens. It's not it's not an intentional thing, but they swept it under the rug. You know, and all of this was very important. It was statements that the jury would have needed to hear, but nobody listened to this tape. Nobody listened to it.
Right.
And anyone that was curious about it was told that it was unusable, that it was garbled, and there were too many objections from Eastwood. And nobody ever played it for the courts either.
Yay.
It's ridiculous.
Yep.
During the appeal, Dr. Cortez, who was Andrew's pediatrician, said that if this child is eating things off the floor, then who knows, maybe he could have picked up salt or a salt shaker or something like that. And they were like, well, would you expect her to call 911 when the child's vomiting? And he's like, no, I don't call 911 my child vomits either.
Right.
And they're like, well, what about when Andrew said that I'm cold? Would you expect her to call for help then? And he's like, no, I don't. And both doctors stated that they believe that Andrew suffered from pica, which is an eating disorder where a child eats non-food items. Pregnant women can also get this. It's just where you crave different things, and you'll see kids eating, like putting rocks in their mouths, or sometimes they say it's an indication of low iron. They just eat all this crazy shit that is not food-related items.
Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes animals will eat, like, grass.
Yeah.
Or dirt.
Right.
They'll literally eat dirt.
Yeah, and sometimes it can just be this pica, or sometimes it's just your body's lacking, like, vitamins and minerals and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So when we look back at why the jury convicted Hannah, it wasn't because they thought she intentionally killed Andrew. It was because they thought that she did not get medical help for her son in a timely manner. Like, come on. This is nitpickery. Had the jury heard the testimonies from both doctors, then things may have went much different. Instead, they heard from the doctors that treated Andrew, the ones that knew nothing about salt poisoning, and at the time had no idea what was wrong with him. It's very clear that the defense kept so many important factors from the jury during the trial.
Yeah, so they even had, what was the name, Dr. Rhoda. And he even admitted that he had no idea, like, what salt poisoning was at the time.
Right.
He was completely clueless. And that's why they bounced him from hospital to hospital, because nobody knew what was going on.
Right.
Nobody knew the signs of salt poisoning.
Oh,
nobody
had
knew
so
how
terrible
to detect it. So bringing in these quote-unquote witnesses for, you know, the prosecution, that's ridiculous, because none of them knew anything about it. None of them. Of course, everybody's going to kind of point towards, well, she killed him, she intentionally did this, because they're uneducated on any of these things, which is crazy considering they're doctors, but...
Well, what's worse...
It's a rare thing, too.
Right, yeah. And what's worse is, like, the segment that I just... The bit that I just read there was... They're basically saying she took too long to get help.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's so stupid.
Well, after her conviction, Dr. Rhoda had contacted the defense, and he was like... Listen, I don't think that she should have been convicted of the murder and given life in prison. He was like, if anything, at most, she should have been given...
Like child endangerment.
Yeah, child endangerment, you know? And I agree, like,
at like
most,
that, so she
could
learn a lesson.
Right, like, I could see them giving her conviction of something like that, you know? Like, your child got into something while you weren't paying attention,
yeah.
Blah, 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 blah.
Like,
but not intentionally forcing salt down his throat.
Yeah, again, if she were to have seriously attempted to force feed this kid salt, then that would have involved her needing three arms.
Right.
Okay? And also through a sippy cup, which cannot be utilized or actuated unless the actuator wants it.
It's not just going to flow out unless they're physically sucking on it.
Plus, I don't know if you noticed this or not, but it is referred to as a sippy cup, as in like you sip it
right
at your leisure.
Yeah. So it was also found that when Andrew threw up in the hospital, it was collected and sent into evidence.
Yep.
Yeah. So though the state had the contents, they refused to share it with the defense.
Well, that's understandable because, I mean, how happy would you be if someone tried to share vomit with you? Sorry, I'm an idiot.
So Sandra Eastwood even told Anna Jimenez that the piece of evidence did not exist. She was even telling her fellow prosecutor that this piece of evidence doesn't exist. No, you're wrong. You're crazy. We don't have this.
I find it odd referring to it as a piece of evidence, whereas it's more like a puddle of evidence.
Well, pretty much, yeah. So Jimenez ended up testifying at the appeal and stated how big of a deal it was that Sandra withheld the evidence and lied about whether or not it existed because it was something that totally could have made or break the case.
Yeah,
and that is true.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And she was like, they wanted the vomit. They wanted the vomit. They wanted the vomit. Either in court or in the office. Like, the defense wanted this piece of evidence. And they asked her, they were like, well, who told them that there wasn't any vomit? And she said, we did. The state did. And Hannah's defense team was like, well, who specifically? And Anna was like, it was Sandra Eastwood. So she absolutely testified under oath that Sandra Eastwood withheld this evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that it works is anything that the state has in the way of evidence is supposed to be brought forward. And it's because if it's being used to bring charges, they can't hide any parts of evidence and hope that, well, hopefully no one finds out about it. The defense has a right to know what evidence is being used against them. That way they can build their form of defense.
Right. Absolutely. Is that considered what's perjury? Would that be? No.
Lying under oath. Kind of.
Yeah.
She... And it makes it even worse because it's not even like she's just a private citizen coming in lying under oath.
She's a freaking DA, man.
Yeah, she is part of the law.
Yeah.
Coming in to the courtroom and lying about this.
She made her damn career off that.
Yeah.
She's a freaking alcoholic,
man.
And
that's what Anna Jimenez was like. She was like, she didn't care about anything. She didn't care what was right, what was wrong. All she seen was, this is a high-profile case.
Yeah.
This is going to make me famous.
Dollar
and that's
signs.
Exactly what
she
said.
What was the damn... We were watching a thing based on the case.
Yeah.
And, like, they were re-interviewing her.
We're getting to that in a minute,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, man. I can't wait to talk about that. Holy shnikes.
It's crazy. So anything that the prosecution has in the way of evidence, they are supposed to bring forward so that the defense can build their defense, pretty much.
Right.
You can't just lock important pieces of evidence away because you want to convict somebody.
Right,
like,
that's not justice.
It doesn't work like
that.
It's
called the justice system. I mean, I think a lot of people have forgotten that, and it really pisses me off.
Yeah, it's not the way that it goes. It's not the way that it should go in any case.
The injustice system. Like, everyone's guilty until proven innocent.
Right.
It's absurd how far we have fallen.
So the appeals trial lasted about 6 days, and it's really crazy because some murder trials don't even last that long, really.
True that.
And during this time, Sandra Eastwood was finally put on the stand, and it was like the only thing she could remember was her own name. She was a completely different person than she was on the first trial. Instead of the forceful viper.
Yeah, she looked like a defenseless, helpless, yeah. Like, oh, I don't know. I can't remember. Oh, I have no, I don't know. Oh,
she
why
was
is
like
this
a
happening
meek,
to me?
Fidgety, little, confused ball of each question that Jerry Goldstein asked her about the things that she had said, claims she made, or the things she did during the first trial, her answer was always, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure. I can't remember.
I don't know. I can't. I don't remember that.
It was somewhere around 70 times that she said, I don't know. And finally, at one point, he's like, do you remember? You do remember the trial, right? Where the individual got life in prison. And she's like, yeah. Is that a question? And he's like, yeah. And she's like, well, yeah, I remember. Like, it blows my mind that the only reason is because
she was
knew
drunk.
Well, maybe. I mean, they did find that during the entire first trial, she was drinking all the time. But at the same time, she also knew that all of the things that she had done, all the ways that she lied, all of the evidence that she hid. And I think she knew that she was in trouble. She was in big, big trouble. And the only way that she could answer these questions was by acting like she couldn't remember any of it because
I honestly
she didn't want to take responsibility for what she had done.
But I legitimately think, judging from her actions and behavior, that she legitimately did not know. She could not remember.
She might not. And I mean, if she was drinking as much as they said that she was.
Well, she was a full-fledged alcoholic. Mm-hmm. Like, and a functioning alcoholic, i.e. she was drunk while she was at work. And
she was.
Her workplace was in the courtroom.
She, even after this, she still continued her work as an attorney, which I feel like she should have been completely, like,
she should have been disbarred.
I don't think she should have been able to keep her job. That's just my opinion. But she is still an attorney, though.
Disbarred?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or disbanded?
It's disbarred. I don't think that she is still like working for the DA office for the prosecution in Texas, but she is still an attorney. Which is crazy.
Yeah, I bet she doesn't get very much business.
Probably not. I checked out her Twitter page and people just like lay it on her.
Oh, they should. She deserves it. She really does.
Yeah, in this case.
You know, and she welcomed it upon herself.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to be
a lying snake,
then you're gonna get found out.
Yeah.
And you're going to be treated accordingly.
Oh, absolutely. So David Jones, he was Hannah's original attorney. He even got up on the stand, and I really think that the things that he said really opened people's eyes because he ended up like breaking down and crying on the stand and
pretty moving.
Apologized to Hannah and her family because he knew that they did not represent her adequately. And his biggest thing was he wished that he would have just took the time to watch the tape with the salt expert.
Yeah.
Because he didn't. He took their word on them telling him that it was just trash and garbled and like you couldn't listen to it. And instead of being like, well, I'm going to take my chances and see what I can find.
Which is what
he just
done.
Was like, okay, well, that sucks. And he realized that if he would have done that, like, the outcome might have been a bit different.
Yeah, because how long was she in prison? She was in prison, what, seven years?
7 years total.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing? Like, we watched a documentary not long ago on a person who was wrongfully convicted as well. And he was in prison for almost
ten years.
Yeah. Wrongly convicted. It took almost 10 years.
And he was only,
to get him out of prison.
I think he was 17 when the crime happened and maybe 19 when he was finally convicted.
Right.
So he did. He spent most of his
adult life
in
prison.
It's really crazy.
Jinx, you owe me a Coke.
I can't remember what the name of it was called. I just talked about it recently.
It was called Dream Killer.
Dream Killer. Yeah. It's on Netflix. It's pretty good.
It is.
It's pretty good. His dad, oh my God.
Dad of the year, for sure.
I love his
dad.
Dad
of the decade.
Mm-hmm. He is amazing.
Yeah.
An amazing, 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 amazing person. It's a really good documentary. You guys should definitely check it out.
Absolutely. But yeah, it's an absolute shame. It's disgusting how long it takes to get wrongly convicted people out of prison.
Yeah.
It takes longer than most people who are guilty, like their entire conviction. Yeah. You know, like their time in prison. It takes longer to Jesus.
It's
so
it's
stupid.
Crazy. Mm-hmm.
You didn't do it. Here's proof. Oh, cool. All right. You're out. Get out.
I really think, too, that like there is so many different hoops that has to be jumped through.
Yeah, absolutely.
And things that have to be filed and
all
of these trials that they have to do and all these decisions that have to be made before they can be freed.
Right.
You know, it's, I mean, I understand that, but it is a shame that it takes so long.
Right. And the reason why is because, well, it kind of follows suit to all those that the legal jargon and all the, you know, the proper edification. I don't know.
Right. No, it is. It's crazy. So ultimately, after hearing all of the actual evidence through the appeal, Judge Longoria said that he had felt that Hannah had a fair trial and decided to uphold his original decision. Ridiculous.
Dumb.
So Cynthia Orr decided to file another appeal, but only to the higher court, which they ordered Longoria to hold an evidential trial. But despite hearing all of the evidence yet again, Longoria denied any change to the ruling and continued with the original guilty charge.
Prick.
During the evidential trial that they had, the defense really touched on Andrew's stomach contents because when he first arrived to the urgent care, he had thrown up. And when they tested the contents, the sodium levels were 48 milliequivalents per liter. And it's a lot of jargon, but I promise it'll make sense. This was very inconsistent with what the state said and accused, which was that Hannah had force-fed Andrew the large amounts of salt, causing the sodium levels to raise to 245 milliequivalents per liter. So basically what happened was the 245 milliequivalents per liter was recorded much later after he had thrown up, which meant that this high level of sodium wasn't collected until after Andrew had been given the saline IV at least 3 to 4 different times.
Mind you, saline is consists of approximately 5 to 10% sodium.
Right. So he really was given a lot of these IV saline solutions.
Salt.
And, you know, again, it was that each time he went to a medical center, he was given these IVs. And each time this happened, he went into cardiac arrest. And they did not put two and two together during any of this.
So one might argue that the true murderer of Andrew, had he been murdered, would have very easily could have been any of the doctors, nurses, or people that hooked him up to an IV, putting more salt into
his body.
Right,
because they didn't know what was wrong with him.
Right.
You know, and giving him all of this saline, which is sodium, you know, was what was causing him to go into cardiac arrest. And, ultimately,
I mean, there's just a small fraction in saline solution. But, I mean, at that point, he had already had so much, you know, that
exactly.
It was adding to
right.
it and making it
exactly.
worse.
Exactly. They also continued to insist that Hannah's attorneys had failed to provide her an adequate defense because if they would have called, again, Dr. Moritz, then the jury would have heard him testify that Andrew was not poisoned, but that he most likely died from accidental self-initiated consumption earlier in the day while Hannah was taking a nap. At the evidential trial, Dr. Moritz was finally able to testify, and he stated that Dr. Rhoda's claim was completely incorrect on Andrew ingesting the spices. He said that there would have needed to be a much larger amount of Cajun spices ingested in order to generate the sodium levels that were higher than 250. He also said that Dr. Rhoda failed to evaluate Andrew properly to find out what the cause of the salt poisoning was, which would have been a very, very significant factor in the entire incident. And I totally agree. I feel like something like this, no matter how rare it is, doctors should be, what's the word I'm looking for?
vigilant,
brought up to speed on like any kind of illness, any kind of medical
Absolutely.
Illness, whether it's a rare thing or not. I always thought that they were, you know, no matter what the case is, that they had some knowledge of what things can be, you know. It's this case really kind of blew my mind. Dr. Moretz also said that it would have been very difficult, if not impossible, for Hannah to force feed a large amount that would be enough to cause such high sodium levels. But he said that it's not impossible for a child with eating disorders or behavioral problems to voluntarily consume that amount. And again, during this evidential trial, they also provided evidence that Andrew, in fact, had a genetic disorder called Prader-Willi syndrome, and this can cause children to eat strange objects. So this also kind of backs up both doctors' claims that, you know, Andrew could have and very well possibly did consume the sodium, the salt by itself.
Yeah.
So in 2014, a few years after the evidential hearing, the Court of Criminal Appeals had requested to hear the evidence in their own court outside of Corpus Christi, because up until that point, every trial and everything that had been done was in Corpus Christi in front of Judge Longoria. So pretty much what can happen at that point is that they can either uphold the original conviction or order a new trial or reverse the conviction and order a release. In September of 2014, 5 months later, Hannah was approved finally for a new trial, and the decision was made to reverse Judge Longoria's findings and rulings. In September 2014, 5 months later, Hannah was finally approved for a new trial. And the decision was made to reverse Judge Longoria's findings. The criminal court said that Hannah was not adequately represented and that there was too much confusion during the trial. They said that the attorney should have called better witnesses as well. And they said that they believed that the evidence would have disproven the case that the state had presented and also proved her innocence. This is kind of when it starts to get a little bit more annoying. Hannah was kept in jail still at this point while she waited months and months for her bond hearing. And this is what we were talking about, like jumping through hoops and, you know, paperwork and all of this stuff. So
yeah,
from the time that they pretty much were like, we think she's innocent, we're going to give her a new trial, to the time she was released, it was years in between.
Yeah.
Like, she sat in jail for years and years and years.
So stupid.
And then between each thing, it could be between months and years between each decision,
right,
ultimately.
Yeah. I think it's stupid. It's a decision. It shouldn't be a decision. It should be a finding.
Kind of,
you know what I'm
yeah.
saying?
Right.
Like, it's such a cocky power trip to be like, oh, well, the court's decision. How about, with all the evidence compiled, we've come to the conclusion, the realization that this is justice.
Right. Another thing, too, Mark Cirka, he was from the DA. He kept saying that they were going to retry Hannah and this time convict her of capital murder.
Yeah, like,
and,
fuck
like,
you.
She was pretty much already convicted of capital murder.
She was.
You douchebag.
She was in prison for life.
Yeah. Hannah's attorneys ended up filing a motion to have Judge Longoria removed from the case.
Thank God.
Thank God. And he ended up refusing, though. But another judge had stepped in and made the decision in which he ruled in Hannah's favor to have him removed.
Yeah.
And some of the reasons, which this is crazy, they should have caught this way before. So apparently Judge Longoria had hired a lighting company that Larry worked for, like, prior to all of this. And his stepdaughter is also married to a relative of the Overtons.
Oh.
So in my opinion, that would be like
conflict of interest.
Yeah, conflict of interest.
To the friggin' 10th degree.
Exactly. So I don't understand why none of this was caught or brought up throughout the 7 years.
That's a mind blow to me.
Yeah.
I had no friggin' clue about that.
It's crazy.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Bunch of fucking idiots.
Mm-hmm. So, finally, She was granted a bond hearing with the new judge, Mario Ramirez, which was set for December 16, 2014.
This is 5 years ago, people.
Yeah. The hearing would either allow her to go home with her family, or she would continue to stay in jail while waiting for a retrial. Jesus, so this is just a bond hearing, like, right, pretty much like your bail.
Uh-huh.
And during this bond hearing, her attorneys had read a letter from Dr. Rhoda, and it was stated that the scientific evidence was incorrect. The prosecution said that it was an insult to Dr. Rhoda. And her attorney was like, well, he contacted us, and he said that he didn't feel that Hannah deserved life in prison. You know, at worst, she maybe should have been convicted of child endangerment, and that he felt that the scientific evidence was incorrect and thought that she needed to be released because it was a botched trial by, right, incompetent attorneys.
Released immediately.
Yeah, and the state, the DA was like, is this legit? This might even not be the same Dr. Rhoda. Is this the same? Yeah. And he was like, yeah, I assure you it is. And they were just trying to make any kind of excuse because they had nothing at this point.
Right.
The state, yeah, the DA had nothing. And they were just trying to find whatever they could to continue. They couldn't find any new evidence. Everything had already been disproved and pretty much thrown out. And then finally, the DA was like, oh, well, we're going to ask for these conditions. We think that her bond should be set at $250,000.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Right. She should be on house arrest, and she needs to be supervised visitations with her children.
Yeah, because the time in the past with all the other children that she's got, you know, like, it's been an issue, right?
Right.
Fucking
dickhead. The judge was like, he turned to her attorneys and he said, so what do you think a good amount is? And Cynthia Orr was like, I mean, $50,000 sounds good. And he was like, all right, $50,000 bond. I'm denying the restrictions and I'm lifting the geographic restrictions and you're released on bond. Like,
nice.
It was that easy because he yeah, he seen all of the evidence,
right,
and he knew that none of this was brought up in the original trial. Everything had already been disproved.
Right.
They hid evidence, they withheld things, and just then, to get a conviction.
Right. And then they stuck to their guns the whole time. The judge,
right,
especially the former judge, all the way through.
Right. He
just
wasn't
stuck to his guns to save embarrassment, just to further embarrass,
yeah,
himself and anyone else associated with that,
exactly,
case from the prosecuting side.
A lot of it has to do with politics, and
yeah,
it's sad.
It
really
is, sad.
Is. And it's scary,
it's
like
terrifying,
how easily something like this can happen to anybody.
Yeah.
Not even just with
anybody,
this specific case, but there are so many ways that things can happen and you can go to jail.
Yeah, if you've got two people, they can be two total strangers. If there are two people with a similar story corroborating you,
an eyewitness, or so to speak.
Yeah. At a specific place at a specific time doing a specific thing, you can go to prison.
Right.
Based off that alone.
Exactly. It's scary. It really is. So 4 months later, in April of 2015, the DA finally dropped the case and filed a motion to dismiss the charges. So this was the state. They finally just dropped it.
Jeez.
Yeah.
4 months later, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on. 4 months is an eternity.
Exactly. They started talking about how in the beginning, the detective was the first issue and then the media, which is true. You know, had he not been so pushy and had his sight set on Hannah and then put all of this information out into the media, people wouldn't have necessarily deemed her as a monster without having all of the facts and the evidence.
You talk about Mr. Hess?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Mr. Hess. He was rude, and he was highly biased with Hannah Overton. Had this been a witch hunt, one could very easily be assured that he had found his witch. And in my opinion, it was almost disgusting how poorly she'd been treated by this crap-ass of a human being. Little Andrew was fading from life, and Hannah's main priority was providing the information the detective wanted or needed so she could go back to the hospital to be by Andrew's side. It's a horrific thought. Imagine this for a moment. Just put yourself into that situation. She's been detained and thrown in jail because this sorry excuse for a human being, a much more sorry excuse for a police officer, having somehow earned the rank of detective, is rudely and ignorantly focusing on trivial bull crap to justify his beliefs. But to what end? Andrew passed away without the comfort of his mother and father with him. because some scumbag thought detaining an innocent woman was the most important thing at the time. The veracity in Hannah's statements were ignored because this narrow-minded detective had a tent in his pants for some flipping chili seasoning. His tunnel vision proved his ignorance beyond the shadow of a doubt, and I hope that to this day he suffers from the inability to sleep well at night due to his atrocious and unforgivable words and actions toward Hannah and the Overton family. But let's not forget about the, at the time, prosecuting attorney Sandra Eastwood, some dim-witted blonde drunk bimbo who strangely couldn't remember not one or even several outcomes pertaining to this particular case, but over 72 separate accounts. She was so drunk throughout this endeavor that she literally could not recall sending a mother of five to prison for life, let alone why. It was mentioned that this was the type of case that would make a prosecuting attorney famous, that this case would make her career. Yet she was unable to recall an assertive answer to even one question during the most recent retrial. It absolutely disgusts me to my very core that there are people out there as ignorant as these two monsters. Pathetic, illogical morons in positions of such immense power. This case has contagiously reminded me of Amanda Knox and how devastating her trials and tribulations were. Granted, that was the Italian government, but holy friggin' sheep shit. If moderately intelligent people held the positions needed to adequately investigate and adjudicate these types of situations, and they did it methodically and solely based on factual evidence instead of forming an emotionally subjected opinion on a person because they have a fascination with fictional detective novels and movies of men whom possess uncanny and ridiculous skills, then things would be done correctly the first time. If we just put a little effort into finding justice, remember justice? Then we wouldn't be ruining the lives of as many innocent people. The governing agents of the world have become tainted. There was a time when the saying was innocent until proven guilty, and somehow, somewhere along the line of corruption, the saying has become reversed. And that's pathetic. The system failed Amanda Knox, the system failed Hannah Overton, and the system has failed many others. End rant. Sorry. But that's how we feel.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. You know, and there was another thing, too, that I forgot to mention. In the beginning, when all of this was going on, before Hannah and Larry were convicted of anything, when they were just putting it out in the media, there was a caseworker for, like, the Department of Children's Services that went to the media and made a statement that Hannah had physically beaten Andrew and there was like blunt force trauma and all of, none of that was true.
No,
none of that was true.
That was ignorance.
And it was put out into the media, and nobody ever corrected it. Nope. Even after they were told that this was incorrect, this information was not true, they still left it out there and never bothered to go back and correct any of it.
Oh my God.
In May of 2017, the Overtons finally received the finding of factual innocence from Nueces County. And in March 2018, Hannah was awarded $573,333 plus annuity from the state of Texas to pretty much make up for being wrongfully convicted
for
7 years.
Sorry for putting you in prison. Here's a random specific amount of money.
Yeah. Like, I mean, thanks for the money, but like...
Fuck
they
you.
Took her life,
you know,
away.
They did.
You know?
You know? And with that other case we watched, the Dream Killer, that he's fucked up. Like, mentally, he is fucked up. And I'm not saying this in a bad way. I'm saying that due to the fact that he spent almost a decade in prison in as his adult life, like, he's even stated that he's messed up from it. Like,
he
doesn't know how to integrate
to
into society.
Yeah.
Right. And... It fucks people up.
Some of the things that he talked about too, like knowing, okay, like when they would go to bed at night, he talked about how like people would be screaming because they would be beaten up by other inmates and things, and like nobody would come to their aid.
Right.
And how it just traumatizes you to hear these horrible things going on and
nobody cares.
Not being able to help them and nobody caring, and it's terrifying.
You guys are in prison, you deserve it.
Yeah.
You know, like, no, man.
I mean, and you know, you guys know that I am all for convicting a monster.
Absolutely.
If they did something.
If they're a monster.
If it's true, if they really did do something wrong, but something like this, I just think that they went way too far with it and never got any of the evidence. Never got any of the evidence right, really. After Hannah was released, she gave a statement and, you know, was like, it's nice to be out. Like, I'm thankful that I'm out, but we never really got to grieve as a family after Andrew's death. And, you know, she talked about how it's everything now reminds her of Andrew and the memories that they have with him. And it's like they're mourning now. She's mourning now. And it's difficult to be, I guess, kind of happy that she's out because, you know, her son died.
Yeah.
And now she's learning to kind of move forward with her life and still mourning the loss of her child. Yeah. So it is very sad.
It's super sad.
It's a very scary case. I know that there are still a lot of people out there that believe that she's guilty. I mean, I don't believe that she's guilty.
Oh, neither.
Everything that I have read, all of the documents that I have read, I truly do believe that she is innocent. I mean, I guess to each their own, you know, everybody has the right to their own opinion.
That's correct.
But I do feel that she is innocent, and I think that it's terrifying, the things that can happen. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
it is sad. I mean, like, you got to be kind of like a heartless sort of person to keep somebody from, you know, seeing their dying son.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like, that's really terrible.
He would have gotten so much credit from me if he just would have been like, you know what? Go to the hospital, be with your son, and we'll do this later.
Well, that's definitely not going to happen because he believed that she had
killed
him.
But still, even so, even if he's like, I'm pretty positive she killed him, then he still could have done that. Time is irrelevant.
It is sad. But yeah, this is part two to the Hannah Overton case.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Or the conclusion, rather.
Yeah. So I wanted to mention real quick, I know CrimeCon's coming up in a few months, and we have a few friends that are going to be at CrimeCon. We have Dialogue that's going to be there.
Yeah.
Voices for Justice.
Oh, yeah.
And if you hop on any of their social media pages, they have codes there that you can use to get like 10-20% off your purchase if you're planning on going to CrimeCon.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you want to see us there, you guys can just let CrimeCon know that you want to see.
Hello, my name is True Crime.
Yeah. I think we might, this isn't a sure thing yet, but we might hop on a plane, maybe, and fly out to Kansas this summer to be a part of the True Crime Podcast Festival.
Yeah,
in
that
July.
Would be really cool. And if we don't hop into a plane, I don't know if I'll be able to fly beside her.
Yeah, I might have a nervous breakdown. I've never flown before.
Yeah, she hasn't. Statistically, it's a safe thing to do, but I was like, just look it up on the internet. You know, like, I mean, come on. And then she does, and lo and behold, you know, that was stupid.
There were tons of different things
that
happened.
But they were cargo planes. She was like, no, cargo plane. There was like 18 freaking, And I was like, okay, well, I mean, we're not going to fly in a cargo plane. We're going to fly in a commercial airline.
We'll see if we fly or drive. I don't know yet.
Yeah.
It'll be so much faster to fly.
I know, but once we're up there, we're up there, and you're in a plane.
And I'm not in control, so.
Right, it's not like you can just be like, yo, will you let me off here?
I'm having a panic attack, please let me down.
Don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah.
I think I witnessed one of those one time. You know, it's terrifying, because, you're there.
One person starts to panic, and then everybody starts
to
panic.
Everyone gets on edge, a little bit, but somebody had to be, like, calmed down big time.
That would be me.
I hope
that would be me.
That would be so embarrassing for me. I'd be like, oh my God, I don't know who this person is. I'm not with her.
Who is this bitch?
Yeah.
All right, guys. Make sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It would mean the world to us.
It would.
And we love reading your guys' reviews.
We do. We really do.
We really
it's very
do.
Helpful. It's very, it is. It's just helpful.
Yeah. And we love seeing what you guys have to say.
Absolutely.
It's pretty cool. Make sure to follow us on Instagram, and we have Twitter, so make sure to follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter name is @HelloCrime, and join the Crime Critter family. Yeah.
Oh,
you guys, don't forget, we have shirts.
We have shirts.
Yeah. And if you want to become a Patreon member, that would be awesome, too.
It sure would.
Get some extra perks.
Exclusive behind-the-scenes footage.
Yeah.
In some cases.
we've thought about maybe doing some like videos of us recording the podcast, and maybe we'll do something like that and put them up there.
Yeah, that'd be neat.
Yeah, it'd be fun. So we hope you guys have a very Merry Christmas. Enjoy all the time with your family, and we will talk to you next week. Yeah.
Bye.
What?
Sorry.
We love you guys.
We love you guys.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah.
That was a Titan Cast episode.